The Way Out Podcast, episode 367. Welcome, Way Out faithful and first-timers, to this week's installment of the Way Out Podcast. We appreciate your ears. Our mission is simple: to bring you powerful recovery stories and recovery power topics so you can jumpstart or re-energize your recovery from alcoholism and addiction. The Way Out Podcast does not speak on behalf of, nor are we affiliated with any 12-step organization. The Way Out Podcast is a proud supporter of Transitions Daily. Would you like to join a free, anonymous online group that offers a daily topic email with popular recovery resources accompanied by a secret Facebook group for discussion? Go to dailyaaemails.com for more information about Transitions Daily. Don't forget to share dailyaaemails.com with friends, in meetings, and with sponsees in recovery. Make sure to check us out on the web at www.wayoutcast.com. There you can subscribe to ensure you get the latest episodes first on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform. You can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Help us recover out loud by giving us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast app. Your voice matters, so share your thoughts on recovery with us by calling us at 218-382-1960 or leaving a message with us on the Anchor app, available for Android and Apple. Someone, somewhere, needs to hear your share. Listen up, everyone. Certified and professional recovery coaching is now available by going to wayoutcast.com and then clicking on Recovery Coaching. We want to help you and those you know who want help in building a strong, rewarding, and enduring recovery. Let our recovery experience and training enhance and strengthen your recovery by visiting wayoutcast.com and then clicking on Recovery Coaching. Finally, a word of caution. This podcast may contain strong language and mature content. Listener discretion is advised. The Way Out Podcast is on right now. I'm Charlie, and in this edition of The Way Out, returning contributor Nick Warnke, myself, and co-host Jason bring you an illuminating and instructive discussion on shadow work in recovery. A quick note about the subject matter and content of this episode. Specifically, some specific memories about childhood sexual trauma were discussed. I edited out some of the most graphic content for everyone's protection, as one of the specific memories evoked was mine, and Jason shared a memory of his own. The memory I shared has been on my heart and mind of late, which is coming up in a season of significant change for yours truly. Still, please be advised, this episode does contain some brief descriptions of sexual trauma. There's a whole lot else in this episode, including a great explainer of what shadow work is, why it's helpful for us in recovery, our personal experiences around shadow work in our individual recoveries, and some practical information about how to start your own shadow work journey. So listen up. Welcome, Way Out casters, new and not so new to the old program. We're so happy that you're here to take in what I believe will be a tremendous discussion on shadow work in recovery. Now, shadow work of late has gotten a lot of notoriety in various social media platforms, and you might think it's a new concept. It certainly is not. And so we're going to talk all about shadow work and shadow work as it relates to those of us who are in recovery. We're going to cover what shadow work is, how we can start thinking about applying it in our own recovery, and some of our experiences around shadow work, and with me to help walk through this rich and I think potentially very beneficial practice is Nick Warren Key, thank you, brother, for suggesting the topic. Thank you for the tremendous research that you've done to help us illuminate this amazing topic. And thanks for the time, brother.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure, Charles. I appreciate it. It's a topic, you know, that is something I've already kind of been a rabbit hole I was already treading, you know, and I'd seen various, like you said, social media posts about it and stuff. And I think there's a large portion of people out there that are still relatively uncertain as to what exactly it is, what exactly it was beneficial about it. And so I thought that, you know, the Way Out podcast, would be a great platform to kind of, you know, just have a great chat about it. So I'm really excited to kind of go through some of that stuff. I've got fresh examples. Like we were chatting earlier, I think it's something that's never truly done. You're never truly finished with it. If it's something that you decide to take on, because, you know, another thing that we spoke about is the fact that it's not something that should be done lightly. And I think one of the things we'll do today is clear up some of the, the misconceptions maybe, or just kind of clarify some of the more of the psychological term of the shadow self, the psychiatric, you know, part of it, and the importance of being responsible when you, it's just like the steps, like they're done in a certain order with a certain amount of accountability, with a certain level of responsibility towards your own well-being. And this is something that should be taken just as serious. So absolutely. Super excited to dive in.
It's going to be, yes, 100%. Jason Rudine is joining us momentarily. So yeah. That's great. Yes. So three will be amazing to have this amazing discussion. Totally. Off the top. Totally. I think it's really important to state that if you are interested or become interested in exploring shadow work in your own recovery, that you make sure that you do it in a way that is safe, that if professionals can be helpful, you invite them in. Because when we start this work, we are going to potentially be addressing some extremely sensitive parts of ourselves. And if we're not in a good place in our recovery, or we haven't examined some unhealed trauma, and we start doing this work, it can get very triggery very fast. And the last thing we want here on this podcast is to send folks headlong into shadow work if it's not a good time for one to do so.
Totally. Completely. Yeah, it's just like, you know, it's like having a lifeguard at the pool. You know, before you know how to completely swim and know what it feels like to be in the deep end of your own mind, yeah, you know, you want to have a lifeguard in there to be able to, you know, because, you know, it, you're looking at things that are not pretty. And so while we're waiting for Jason to come on, I think it'll be a good time to kind of clarify. So a lot of some of the people, I guess I should say, oh, there he is.
Jason Rudine, brother.
Hey, it's
we were from playing another apples. Mother. We were playing apples to apples.
Hey,
look, if there's anything that's going to captivate your attention and make you lose track of time, it's definitely apples to apples.
Yeah.
That is a captivating game, to be sure.
Sorry. I was like, oh, shit.
We're about to have our own little game of apples.
Right,
apples,
right. Yeah. So Jason, thank you, brother, for joining the discussion. I've really set the table just in terms of what we're trying to accomplish on this episode, which is really to introduce shadow work, help people understand what it is, give some folks some practical ways that they can start potentially looking at this in their own recovery. And then we could share some personal experience and insight around it. I've already given the official Way Out podcast disclaimer that we do not recommend you just headlong jump into shadow work if you are not ready to do so, because there's some things that you may address in your shadow work that can be rather sensitive and difficult. So, you know, invite professionals when that seems to be helpful, and for sure, make sure that you're doing it with trusted people in a safe space and in a time and space that you really feel ready to be able to address some of this stuff.
Yeah. Right on, man. Yeah. It was a big part of my recovery, actually.
Yeah, I know. And you've talked about it a lot, so I'm excited about it. So let's get a good working definition of what shadow work is, because before we hit record, Nick and I were talking about it. Sounds like a scary thing, right? Like we're going to really, you know, Anakin Skywalker becoming Darth Vader, as Nick said, right? And that's
it
not
is October.
It is.
Right.
It is. Then it's a shadow time spooky of year.
Yeah, people hear the word shadow, you know, and I think it turns a lot of people, especially when they're not familiar with it, you know, they hear the word like shadow work. They think of like, you know, like things being, you know, work being done in the shadows. And well, it is work being done in the shadows, but it's, you know, it's more of a context of you know, and bringing light to the shadows really is what it is.
You bet. So it was really introduced to Western society by Carl Jung. Mm. And let's really talk about this in two parts. Shadow. What are we talking about when we mean shadow? And we're really talking about repressed or exiled parts of ourselves.
Yes. Yeah. Carl, so the shadow, the term we get today, shadow work, is made popular, like you said, by Carl Jung, who was, he was like basically a student of Sigmund Freud. And, you know, that's a whole nother rabbit hole of it itself. But just to touch on shadow work in general, we would want to, you know, he was a guy that he differed from Freud in the belief of spirituality. And, you know, they had a lot of the same ideas, and he learned a lot about the psychology and psychoanalyzing and stuff. But when it came to the inner self and the spirit, that's where things broke apart. And so the shadow self is the part of ourselves that we don't necessarily see, either because we choose not to look at them or because we're just ignorant of them. And our ego is taken front and center in our life. And it's something that we've stuffed it under the bed. It's deep grained habits that have formed through maybe trauma, our childhood upbringing, things that we don't like to acknowledge that have had an effect in our life, because it's not pretty to think that, you know, something that happened to me when I was 5 years old, that I choose, you know, not to remember and I haven't thought about in years, could be affecting my life today. And whether that's sexual trauma, physical trauma, emotional trauma, you know, and it comes in all shapes and sizes. But what shadow work is the practical way of bringing light to those areas in our lives that are affecting us today, whether it be through our habits, our perspective, the way we see ourselves and others, and the value we place in others' roles in our lives and stuff, and the level of selfishness that we have. And when we look at those things, it's not easy. It's hard, and it's a lot of people don't look at it because it's so hard. And you have to have a really strong foundation in your self-esteem to be able to handle that. And there, I think in my walk, I've done certain, you know, steps and had certain assistance along the way that have helped me start to look at those things. But I believe truly that I'm coming up on 3 years next month, November, you know, fentanyl freak, you know, getting clean off of fentanyl and heroin. Thank you. And it's tremendous. Thank you guys. And so like with that, the last year has really turned up, you know, I've started a new career, you know, new goals, new motivation, new, and all of it. I would strongly attribute to some of the, you know, quote, shadow work that has been going on in my own life and cleaning up my side of the street in my life and my relationships. And it's like we get clean and we've got this battle zone left behind us that is just like, you know, blown out buildings with no, you know, we've got to do a lot of damage repair in our relationships and rebuilding bridges. And so like part of that is, you know, people, you know, we get in recovery. A lot of us, our words mean nothing. They're cheap, you know, especially in early recovery. You know, more and more as our actions kind of, you know, as our actions show and start speaking for us, then our words start to have more meaning. But like, you know, the actions and people see a change in you that's like beyond anything. And it's looking at those parts of ourself and self-exploration that I think make all the difference. And I know both of you gentlemen, obviously, as our conversations kind of have alluded, that we have all had these journeys within ourselves that we're going through.
You bet. And Nick, you touched on a number of key points that I want to highlight. And then I want to transition into a discussion of why we would even want to do shadow work. So we'll talk about that in a second. But number one, Carl Jung, student of Freud, but also a friend of the 12 steps, specifically yeah. Alcoholics Anonymous. And because of the spiritual piece that Jung invited into his work, it really helped lay a lot of the foundation of what we see in the 12 steps, which is not surprising because really at the root of shadow work is self-examination and self-reflection.
Yeah.
And that's baked into the 12 steps, self-examination totally. And self-reflection. We do it a thorough 4 and 5, and then we're doing it every day in 10, right? And so this practice of self-examination, self-reflection, and then looking to not condemn ourselves, not judge ourselves for it, but
accept
then
ourselves.
You bet.
Accept totally. Our whole fine. Self.
You bet.
For the so, first time.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely, Jason. So why don't you talk a little bit about what shadow work has done for you? I know you've talked about it off and on a lot when it comes to the interviews that you do with a lot of the guests that come on the way out, and a lot of our, it's come up in a lot of the topic episodes that we've done in one way or the other, right?
Right.
So talk about your experience around shadow work and what it's done for you.
Well, I know when I first started learning about it, I had it was in the Healthy Love meeting, which is on intherooms.com. I did a interview with the lady who created that. It's kind of its own pathway, Healthy Love, and it stands on 3 pillars, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, shadow work, and then Imago relationship therapy. But Rachel was like, she started teaching about shadow work specifically 1 week, and I was just like messaging her. I'm like, could we like delve deeper into that? Because I need to hear more. Like, I need to learn more about this. And essentially, you know, I think we did a few weeks on it, and she really got in depth. I mean, every time I went to them, her meeting, I would have a notebook out, you know, and I would just take notes like avidly. But she basically, you know, like the whole idea was learning to embrace those parts of ourselves that we normally would try to close off from everyone, including ourselves. We didn't even want to look at them. And I understood that concept and whatnot, but what really got me, man, like, was one time she was doing like a guided meditation. And, you know, everybody in the group had a different experience, because the way she worded things was kind of more vague. So it was like left up to your own interpretation, right? So what do you feel within yourself, you know? And for me, I think a big piece of my shadow, you know, or a big shadow for me, it was, you know, my 5-year-old self, victim of sexual abuse at the hands of my cousin, which, you know, after being stifled for a decade or more, became this repressed, kind of like super awkward when it came to certain things, sexual, and I had a lot of issues, based around sex. But I think it was because it would tap into that, piece of me, which was scared and didn't feel safe. Yeah. And so essentially, though, this was like super game changing. It was like the simplest fucking thing. Like she like did a one on one with me because I asked her about it and I didn't want to like go into it in front of the whole group because I was still trying to kind of figure it out. And so she kind of did a one on one with me and she was like, OK, so we've kind of uncovered what it is, that you think affects you the most. Right. And she was like, I'm going to do this guided meditation. Right. But she's like, first, this was really all it took. She's like, first, I need you to name your shadow, like name it. So I named it JJ because that's what people called me when I was little, mm-hmm. And then she walked me through this process of finding him and sitting with him and like giving him a hug and letting him know everything was going to be okay pretty much. And it was like, dude, it was crazy. It just lifted this profound weight off of my shoulders. And I'm not saying it like completely went away. If this is like you said, Nick said it's like a lifetime of thoughts, beliefs, and attitudes and ingrained, belief system that is very powerful. So it comes up, but like even just naming it, I think added this personal element where it wasn't like, cause it used to feel like, what is wrong with me? Like a big question mark over my head, where now it's like, when I have those things come up, I know kind of where it's coming from. And it's coming from JJ, JJ needs some love right now. And, I need to expose it to, and whereas before I would just get super squeamish and I'd be like crawling in my skin, like trying to explain my feelings. And then it would just become more and more uncomfortable. And I was prone to get defensive or, run the fuck away because they've seen too much. They know too much, like I should have never opened my mouth to that, that girl or whatever. So that was kind of how one piece of it, how it really affected me in a very profound way, because that was a part of myself I didn't think it'd ever heal.
Right.
I don't know if I've ever asked you this, Jason,
but did you ever confront or address this directly with your cousin?
Yeah, dude. When I was 13, I freaking was over at my uncle's and he came over when they were out. And I was sitting there and, at this time I'm already smoking weed and shit. So I'm like baked out of my gourd.
And you've got your armor on now.
Yeah. And I was, kind of husky at that time because I was before powders and shit. But man, he came over and he knocked on the door and stuff and I didn't know who it was. So when I opened the door, I was like, whoa, blindsided. And I got really fucking tense, dude. Like I was pissed and I kind of froze though at the same time. And I just felt really tense. And I told him, I'm like, you're not supposed to be here. Like they told me you have a restraining order. You're not supposed to be here. So no, you can't come in. And he wanted to like check on his cat or something. And it was an awkward exchange. And then I finally was like, all right, go downstairs, and check on my cat. And then I went upstairs and I like unscrewed the handle off of the like broom or mop or something like that. Cause it was, I just, watched Coming to America when Eddie Murphy whoops Samuel Jackson's ass with the stick and saves everybody from the robbery or whatever. So I'm like, that's fucking genius. And I'm, and then I was standing there with that handle behind me and I was like, you're not coming in. And he left. But that was that was like, I guess I didn't really talk to him about it, but
right. And that's the thing. So, and I don't think I've ever said this out loud to anybody outside of very exclusive company, but this has come up for some reason in my own head, and I had forgotten about it for many years, and it'd come up and then I would shove it down. But before my mom died, like, she was really sick, and we didn't really know that because my dad didn't really tell us that, and sort of figured that stuff in hindsight. But regardless, she was in the hospital, and it was toward the end. And so we were at my aunt and uncle's house, and we had to be there for a long time while my mom was in the hospital. And we had to share beds with our cousins. And I remember one night, my cousin, like, I woke up in the middle of the night, and there's music playing, and my cousin
did something highly inappropriate to me.
And I froze. I didn't know what to do, and I just pretended I was asleep. And it was over. And I never talked to him about it. I never said a word about it. He never said a word about it. And it's like it never happened, right? Man. And I was terrified. I didn't know what to do. And I just wanted it not to have happened. And so when we talk about this shadow stuff, like, this is the kind of stuff we're talking about. This stuff that happened, and for one reason or another, we shove it down. And it can be a traumatic experience. When you talked about your shadow work, it very much reminded me of my EMDR process.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very similar process in the trauma with my mom dying. And I got to walk through the day that she died and my dad telling us, and I got to be there for myself and tell 11-year-old Charlie it's okay.
Yeah.
And it feels like I have an opportunity to do that in this situation as well. So it's just amazing and not a coincidence that Nick brings it up, that it's, this has been on my head for the last like 2 weeks, really up in my stuff. It won't go away. And then Nick brings this topic up. You talk about your experience with your cousin. It was my cousin. Like, this is just not a coincidence in any way, shape, or form. And right. So I'm just so grateful that we're able to have this discussion. And
same.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I just have to say, like, to, you know, for you to bring, you know, and speak that out loud, you know, a memory that, which I'm assuming is so old, you know, for you. And you could have lived the rest of your life having never spoken that out loud with anyone.
Yeah.
You could have lived the rest of your life just sitting in a cupboard somewhere, never brought, you know, just in the shadows. And so I just, I have to say, you know, I respect that a lot, because, you know, those are the things, like, we could just sit with that stuff. That's a prime example of something that we could just sit with, and our life would be okay. You know, it'd be manageable maybe. But, like, when those things add up and you got so many cupboards that you're trying to keep shut, you know, and they start coming open at the wrong time, and you know, like, life doesn't function anymore. So
you bet.
Well, I know for me, you know, this stuff did repeatedly come out in weird ways, and it just, you know, completely complicated the fuck out of things with in relationships and all that. I mean, I remember when I first, because I repressed those memories, man, until I was like 12, and I started having those reoccurring nightmares, and I had them for many months before I ever mentioned anything to my mom about it. But it was like these dreams with this faceless man and this faceless boy, and you fill in the blanks, dude. And I literally started to get so disturbed, because I was like, am I the boy, or am I like this sick, twisted fuck?
Oh,
yeah, I had no idea, like,
right,
you know, who I was yet, man. I was still I was developing as a person. And I mean, I think that honestly, even just that short time of those dreams before I brought it up to my mom, like created another shadow self.
Yeah.
Like,
right, totally.
When I get into certain sexual situations that I find maybe taboo, but also very like arousing, I can have a tendency to feel like I'm like inherently fucked up. Right.
Sure.
And so this is all, you know, that's another piece of the whole thing, you know, like this shadow work, man, was cool because it just taught me to be like able to really like get up close and personal with all these different pieces of myself. And it really, in a lot of cases, I was discovering pieces of myself that I didn't even really realize were there. If that makes sense. So,
you bet.
But I think to your point, you know, it's helpful to have somebody who's knowledgeable about this stuff and like processes that are effective in uncovering those pieces of yourself and identifying them in a safe space and then not letting you leave the session, you know, wide open, because dude, your mind will go crazy.
Absolutely.
Like, run amok.
Yeah. You got it.
And I wouldn't want to know what it would be like without having a guide who could kind of help you open it up and shut it off.
Yeah.
And then we can start getting to a place where it's productive,
right,
along the way. But that don't happen right away, you know. And it was nobody's got the kind of time to sit and do it all at once. So
no doubt, it's the difference between ripping a scab right off when it's not ready to be ripped off versus letting it heal, tending to it, taking the bandage off, tending to it, adding some antibiotic ointment, putting the band-aid back on, letting it heal. That's the difference, right? Versus just ripping that scab right off, right?
Totally.
And let that thing bleed all over the place and, you know, get on everything and everybody, right?
Right.
And everybody.
Right.
That's exactly.
And that's what will happen. Or you'll just bleed on everybody, right? And there'll be a lot of collateral damage around that. So I think it's instructive here to also say that it doesn't have to be trauma, our shadow selves. Think about an example where you might have grown up hearing be quiet all the time. Shh, quiet, shh, quiet. And you develop an understanding that your voice doesn't really matter. That nobody cares what you think. And that has ramifications for you in your work life or in your personal life, because you've come to the understanding that what you have to say doesn't really matter. That's also a shadow, right? It could be that you view yourself as a really generous person and you really value that. And there's a good chance that within your shadow self, you might have repressed some selfish feelings. And you're overcompensating, right, by being extraordinarily generous.
Right. Okay.
So these are kinds of things that can also be shadow parts that aren't necessarily have to be rooted in significant trauma, per se. There's a spectrum of our shadow selves. But the reality is the benefit and why we would want to take a look at our shadow selves is because likely they're causing problems, like Jason said. It was causing problems. It was messing stuff up. So if you find problematic relationships, personal, work, professional, family, intimate, there's a good chance that you might benefit from some shadow work. And some good questions just to start asking. And then I want to get Nick to talk about his experience with shadow work. But there's some good questions to start asking yourself when we think about shadow work to prompt some self-reflection. And again, we talk about that self-examination and that self-reflection being really at the core here.
And self-discovery.
You got it. And self-acceptance.
Yes.
Ask yourself, what do I overdo? And why? What triggers you? Who triggers you? If you spot it, you got it. What causes severe distress, anxiety, or panic that seems to be out of proportion to the event that triggered it? Maybe I trip out a rock and I get really, really angry over tripping over a rock at myself or at the city or whatever. And that seemed to be a rather inappropriate and disproportionate reaction. Maybe somebody cuts me off and I lose my mind. Good chance that there's some shadow work that could be done around that. What has been passed on in your family tree? Addiction, estrangement, violence, anger, secrecy, abuse. Those things could be in you too. So just some things to think about when we start doing some of that self-reflection around shadow work. But at the root of most of this is, where am I reactive the most? What triggers me the most? What promotes an extreme response of distress or anxiety or panic or anger or fear? And that's a good place to start. For two reasons. Number one, that's probably causing problems for you and others. If you're very reactive over something or a series of things. And it's a sign that there's some shadow work that could be done that could be beneficial, right? Nick, tell us about some of your experiences around shadow work.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think this is a good transition into, you know, some of that stuff that, you know, we think about in the terms of shadow work is the things we don't look at and the things that, you know, I think for me that I would start, you know, labeling, you know, the things that I've done as shadow work, you know, started with Vinland, my last trip to treatment, the last time that I got clean, where they addressed some of the issues of my concussions in my childhood and my teenage years and how they affected my addiction. And I had never opened up about that in a therapeutic setting, you know, in a clinical setting before. And so I kind of went through a lot, some of my head injuries and concussions, and then learned a lot about the way that my brain developed as a teen and, you know, the way my habit for seeking, you know, attention and all these other things. And I think that opened up a floodgate because it brought me back to the memories of, like, you know, the trauma of my childhood where, like, you know, I was competing in boxing and at a state level in the Junior Olympics and I won state and, you know, that was good. But then at the regional level, you know, it's a very competitive sport, especially, you know, at 13, 14, 15. And, you know, I started remembering times where, like, my dad would force me to go to the boxing gym and spar and I would just get my ass kicked. You know, I leave like every day with a headache and I would leave with like spots in my vision. And it finally came to a head when I had, like, you know, one day I got the shit kicked out of me real bad and I started losing like sight in my like peripheral sight in my vision and got a CAT scan and turns out there was a bunch of scar tissue from, you know, previous concussions and it was, you know, bruised from the most recent one. And that finally ended that. But I kind of buried that stuff away and moved on to my new life in high school and drugs and everything. But when I
kind of brought this up again, it wasn't something I was prepared for at the time, but luckily, obviously, I was in treatment. So
yeah,
that's the time to kind of start that stuff. And so it brought out some of these things that I thought about, like, you know, how maybe that did affect a lot of my character, you know, my pride and my longing for acceptance. And because for the longest time, that was like my identity, you know, like I was the boxer, I was the, you know, that tough kid or whatever. And I lost that, I felt like. And so like that brought out other things about about myself in treatment. I started looking at like my use of like, you know, Adderall and Suboxone, and, you know, I'd just gone to the nurse's office and got him to like re-up all my scripts on my stuff while I was in treatment, you know, my Suboxone and all this other stuff. And then it made me it was like the first time I ever looked at my shadow, like, or tried to look, you know. I was in my treatment literally like right before Thanksgiving. My family didn't want me around. And it was just a, you know, like a horrible time in my life. And it was like I kind of turned and looked, and it was like, you come up with excuses all the time. You never do what you say you're going to do. You're stuck in here high on Suboxone and trying to get more dose up on your Adderall. You're doing the same thing you were before. You're just here like less than 6 months ago in the same treatment center. You can't get your shit straight. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And like, I just had this like art, like I was screaming at myself in my mind in this treatment, and I was just broke down. And it was like, why the fuck can't you just like do what you say you're going to do? Why does everything have to be an excuse, or you got to do it the smart way, or, you know, a better way, or, you know, why can't you just do it their way and just stick to it? And so like, that was an awakening moment for me where I kind of opened myself up to looking at those things. And it transitioned later on in recovery with, you know, a lot of other things in my life. And most recently, like, you know, it made me look at a lot of my, you know, the medications I've been, you know, trying. I've been on a journey of getting off of all my medications. Like, you know, I quit Suboxone in Vinland. That day I had that moment, I went to the nursing station and had her take me off Suboxone, had her take me, you know, switch me off the Adderall. And I was serious about it, you know. And so since then, I was on gabapentin. They put me on in treatment. And, you know, I was on, you know, I had some things switch up, and I had some anxiety issues. So they switched up the dose, you know. This is, you know, maybe 6 months back. And it started affecting my behavior, but my energy levels were good. So I didn't really care. You know, I was more chatty, you know, I was gabbing a lot. And, you know, but it got to the point where I was like, you know, I didn't even realize I was walking around constantly. Like, I just did a line of blow. Like the most intense conversation, like, yeah, dude, look, and then this happened, you know. And I was just like, and then in my relationship with, you know, Casey, you know, my girlfriend, like, we, you know, we had a rocky time because, like, she got to see me a lot, and she got to see, like, there was no, you know, she was waiting for the down switch, you know, like for me to turn down instead of, and then, and she didn't know it was the gabs, and I didn't really acknowledge to myself that it was, you know, the dose of the gabs I was on. And, and so, like, finally, like, I was doing this shadow work stuff. And a lot of that for me is meditating and just thinking about shit. I'll put on some really good music, and I'll put on some, you know, and then I started looking at things from an outside perspective, and it allowed me in this moment of like reflection. I was watching myself converse with like Casey, and she's trying to talk to me, and like, she's the type of person, she's the opposite of me, like, attention wise. She can only focus on one thing at a time. Me, I can be, you know, driving. Yeah, I don't do this anymore. This is theoretical, but a texting, driving, you know, like a million different, and she's not that way. So like, she's neglecting focus on everything else every single time I'm trying to tell a story about something that makes no difference, you know, like some rabbit hole I'm down, you know. And I shifted things and completely quit taking the dose I was taking and started to taper off. And it changed. It started to allow me to see that, like, I was so discombobulated. I wasn't grounded, you know, and that was the most recent, you know, and like, this is still ongoing, you know. This is, I'm still, like I say, coming up on 3 years, and I'm still, you know, there's still parts of my addiction that are trying to bleed into my life and take from me, you know, the work that I've done. And had it not been for like the you know, thank God that she was able to kind of like, because some people would have just dealt with it and settled and been like, oh, he just talks a lot. But like, she knew, she didn't know exactly what, but she knew, like, energy wise, like, my energy was off. Like, I was just something, you know. And then finally I told her and then after I made the switch, it was like, you know, completely, like, then she realized, you know, because I didn't really say anything, I just changed the dose. And then just kept, you know, like, let her know what I did. And then I just, like, you know, a couple weeks later, she's like, honestly, it's like you're a different person. You know, you're not forgetting shit all the time. You're not like hijacking a conversation for 20 minutes and just interrupting, which I still do. Don't get me wrong. I'm still working on all that, you know, quick to listen, so to speak. But so, yeah, I mean, that's like the most recent example. Like, yeah. And it doesn't have to be something monumental and big either. You know, shadow work can be come down to the littlest thing of like, you know, a habit that you have. Like, I'm trying to think of something, you know, get like you don't lift the toilet seat up, you know, when you pee and you got ladies in the house or something, you know, and like, you know, just like, you know, something, you know, the shit that you do, like in the back of your head, you're like, yeah, I probably could have, you know, lifted the seat up. But, you know, like, you know, and those little things add up. But like it's a microcosm of like the macro of like life, where like these little things that, you know, we let affect us that if we don't look at them, we'll never change. That's why it's uncomfortable. That's why like growing pains aren't pleasant, you know? And so like to look at these things now, there's a reason why I didn't start looking at this shit early on in recovery. You know, like I'm 3 years, you know, like, you know, it's time. It's been enough time for me to be grounded enough in like who I am and where I'm at to start looking at. And it was just the right time for me. But like a lot of it comes down to like journaling, you know, I'll do like meditation, I already mentioned, you know, but journaling, just writing down my thoughts, you know, to try to like, cause you know, it's so easy to get lose sight of your priorities, you know, in the face of like life and stuff. And like, you know, it's so easy to like focus all your energy on hiding these aspects of yourself that like you don't want to look at, or, you know, it's like for another day, you know, like I'll look at that tomorrow. You know, I'm not gonna that, you know, that asshole, we're not going to talk to him today because he's just going to ruin my day. You know, and so like, like being proactive and quit, you know, the procrastinating of like, we know there's shit we need to do inside. And there's, it's amazing to me how many people I talk to that have never that, you know, and it, now it's crazy because I've been doing it, you know, for a while now, but like meditating or even just finding like 20 minutes a day in silence or like just some instrumental music or whatever your thing is to just shut your brain off, you know, and not like if I didn't do that and didn't build that into my routine, you know, a chance to like usually at night and sometimes in the morning too. Just like a chance to center myself, to think about these things like, okay, like, you know, taking yourself out, take a look from someone else's perspective, like, okay, like, what am I like on my worst day to be around? You know, that I've heard that. I think I was in Teen Challenge when I heard that question and it stuck with me. But it's like, you know, on my worst day when it's like everything's going wrong, like what kind of person am I like to be around? You know, and the answer is usually, you know, we don't want to look at that because we're usually probably not too pleasant. And so, you know, between, you know, and I know you guys, you know, I'm sure you guys have other, you know, practical steps that you guys do in your own life, but, you know, that have led you to, you know, kind of look at some of these things. And everybody's different. You know, everybody, some people learn from books, some people learn by doing, and shadow work is no different. You know, some people can read a book, you know, Carl Jung and, you know, some the psychology of it and understand it. But this is something that you won't truly understand it until you look at it. And it's like Peter Pan, you know, he had Wendy, you know, his shadow was all over the place. He was chasing it all over. He couldn't find it, couldn't, you know, and he had another person to help sew it on and help him look at it. And, you know, and it's like we need those people in our lives, those, you know, Wendy's to the Peters that have people that can help us look at it. And I see you smiling. I know that's a cheesy.
No, rap, dude, I love it.
You know,
but I thought that's such a great example. I thought,
you know, and well, and it goes even deeper. You know, he got to Neverland by happy thoughts. Happy thoughts. So those are the things, you know, like we need to look at, and it has to be done with a Wendy or a person, you know, not alone. You know, you want to have someone because you also want that perspective too. Like, you know, like sometimes our beliefs about ourselves aren't always accurate, or our beliefs about a situation because we're so emotionally invested or whatever. You know, we're compromised emotionally. And so like we need that person that's going to look at the situation with the lens of truth and reality and be like, no, dude, you're being a dumbass. Like for real.
Absolutely. You know?
Well, and I think that's a good segue because I did wanted to chime in on something that you'd said kind of towards the beginning of your share. I just think is really instructive is that you said it could be the littlest things. And it is so true. And it's an oxymoron as well that we can have the tendency to get super defensive, or as Charlie said at the beginning of the show, like have a very overt reaction to a situation simply based on the fact that in our mind, that's like such a small thing. You know, it's like if somebody's like, you play too much and you get all butthurt because they are like saying you play too much and shit. It's like, dude, where, what is that about? You know, like, where did that come from? But I think that it's instructive because we need to understand that, you know, like in the beginning of this journey, we're going to have those big glaring things, you know, like what I talked about that seem like these unsurmountable things. And then the further in our healing journey we go, it really does end up coming down to these weird little things. And a lot of times maybe it doesn't necessarily bother us so much, but it bothers the people we care about. And we don't want to destroy those relationships. So it makes us want to work on those parts of ourselves as well. And that's, it can be almost more difficult when you're getting down into those tiny things, seemingly tiny things, because you feel like, what's the fucking point? Or like, it's not, well, you know,
they're much easier to slough off and ignore and minimize when they're small.
And much more difficult to change, you would think, that they would be, because once you actually try, once you finally get humble enough to say, okay, I'm gonna work on this, you find out it's not as easy as you thought, you know.
And it might not be as small as you thought.
Right. Oh, it's definitely not as small. How are you gonna get mad about something that's not a big deal?
Right.
You know, that remember right, that was how it. Like with my
you got it.
How my clean date changed story. That was the whole thing. I was pissed off for weeks because they told me I had to reset my clean date because my bedtime beers count.
Right.
And I thought they shouldn't count because I wasn't getting a buzz.
Right.
I thought they shouldn't count. So and if it's such a, you know,
I didn't inhale. Thing,
oh, I was getting so angry, bro. And then, you know, really down the pike, I realized at some point, like, wow, it's so silly that I thought it was not a big deal when it, obviously, because I was hella bent out of shape about it. Hella.
Yeah.
Secret. Yeah, man. And then and then when I tell that story now, they just laugh at me and they're like, it wasn't no secret, man. We knew you were pissed as fuck.
you think you're like bearing it so well. You're like, yeah, I'm gonna be stoic about this.
They knew I was fucking really bent out of shape about it.
Yeah.
So they're pretty surprised when I finally let it go and I was like, I don't know what happened, but I just did. That's cool.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good time now to talk about why shadow work matters in recovery, some of the benefits and some practical suggestions around how you might be able to implement some shadow work practices in your own recovery. So shadow work fundamentally can allow you to uncover some root causes that are contributing to a lack of what Bill Wilson would call emotional sobriety. And when we get down to causes and conditions, and we do it in the spirit of shadow work, we're doing it in a very self-accepting way, which transitions into some of the benefits of shadow work, which is shedding shame, shedding guilt, shedding the things that we feel icky about. Like, I can't show this to anybody. I can't show that to anybody. And we can bring more of our whole selves, increasingly more of our whole selves to the world, but most importantly, to ourselves and to the people that we care about. And when we're in intimate relationships and those people inevitably discover that shadow self, they're not going to poke it by accident and find there's a bear behind it. Right? So there's a lot of benefit to being able to bring that out into the light with plenty of self-acceptance, grace, and self-compassion. And then you can start doing some work around it. And that can be journaling, as Nick mentioned. I journal. It's extremely helpful. That can be a meditation. Nick mentioned that. I meditate. Extremely helpful. That can be in formal therapy or in some sort of mentor-mentee kind of relationship. Or it can be a combination of any of those. The root of that is self-examination in a safe space, in a way that's safe for you and helpful for you. And that will help you start to accept that part of yourself and be able to then move through it. And so then you can now understand when you feel reactive about something, you know where it's coming from. You know why you're doing it. And you can afford yourself the opportunity to be there for yourself, as Jason related in his experience, as I related in my EMDR experience, which was very much shadow work. Mm-hmm. Be there for yourself. Okay, this is coming up. I need to honor that. I need to recognize it. I need to accept it. And I need to be there for myself right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. However that looks like for you. Maybe that's taking a walk. Maybe that's calling a friend to talk about it. Those are the things that we can do that will help us start integrating our shadow selves into our host selves. And it's not a linear process. It's not a neat and tidy process. And as both Jason and Nick related, it's a lifelong process.
Right. And there's also groups available. I mean, if you do a simple Google search and you just say like shadow work groups or shadow work classes, you'll find links to online groups that are facilitated by professionals within this. You'll find all sorts of resources as far as literature or workbooks that can help guide you through the process as well. And there's even other ones like, you know, legitimate like therapies and stuff. You know, I mean, I think for me, you could pay thousands and thousands of dollars for the therapy, but if you find like a good group where people are really serious about that work, I think you know, community is the key. Don't do it alone, in my opinion. So I would think that, you know, unless you're really scared something's going to like break you forever, you know, I would maybe try a more cost-effective economic approach and go hit up some groups or something. But
And you know yourself well enough and to be able to tell perhaps what path makes the most sense for you. And to your point, Jason, if you're in a group that's serious about it and something like that comes up for you, dollars to donuts, they're going to tell you maybe this is something best handled by a professional.
Right. And they could probably tell
you. And they can support you in it and they can guide you in it and make some recommendations around it, right? And so,
but yeah, there's tons of stuff out there, man.
There is. Like, check the show notes right now.
Yeah.
Because we have a bunch of great info links in the show notes that can get you started.
I mean, educating yourself on it is the you know, because just because you're educating yourself on what it is doesn't mean you're actually starting the shadow work, you know. Right. You know, but just becoming educated on the subject matter, what it entails, you know, what you're signing on for, so that you can become more aware. Because, you know, the final point I wanted to end on was just, you know, the benefits of it is, you know, a lot of people here in recovery, you say like, to thine own self be true. Right. You know, I've seen it on the back of coins, or like, know thyself, you know, and in order to know yourself, it's like when you're doing shadow work, what you're doing is bringing light
you're spreading light into the darkness in your life. And with each new, you know, ray of light that's coming in, it's like you're learning how to see new shades of color of yourself. And so with each day that you're doing this, you're getting a more fuller picture of yourself. You're getting a more fuller view of the reality of who you are and your role and whether, you know, whatever your higher power is, it doesn't matter. This is all about like who you are and your inherent flaws, and you're becoming more aware and allowing that. And because the whole point is shrinking the shadow. That's the point of shadow work, is not dwelling in there and hanging out like Anakin, like we said, going to the dark side. Like, you want to see it there and know that you don't have to dwell there. You can bring light there, so it doesn't have to be shadow.
We ain't trying to pitch a tent.
Think of those rays of light as love, you know, like, so you're loving another little piece of yourself.
Yeah, we ain't backpacking through the valley.
We ain't trying to pitch a tent in Shadowville, okay? No. That's not what we're trying to do, right? And that's a great, great reference, Jason. It's a great way to say it. So say that again without Nick and I talking all over it.
Well, I said think of each of those rays of light, you know, everything that you address or everything you discover, every piece of yourself that you have to like meet and identify and then like make peace with. That's that's where that light comes from, and that's love, man. So like you're getting, because I remember, dude, 3 years into my recovery going, when's the self-love piece come in? I'm not there yet. This is where it comes in, man. This is the shit that's gonna help you love your whole self, and
love yourself whole. You can love your whole self by loving yourself whole, and that's that process
with the holes and everything.
You bet.
I was thinking that too.
Yeah, we'll keep going.
So Nick, I gotta say, the way you related having an intellectual understanding of shadow work is not doing shadow work, and that's such a great point. And I relate to that on so many levels, especially around my 12-step journey, where I very much intellectually understood the
problem. Right.
And did not work them. And could wax poetic about them ad nauseum.
Yep.
And stayed sick.
Yep. The journey.
Because I didn't work them. Intellectually understanding something isn't the same thing as practicing it.
Completely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you're talking about like you learned about it. And I know when you learned about it, it brought some things to mind. But that's not the same as working on them. But I mean, it is a starting point, dude.
You bet.
Right.
So what's your next step? You know?
Yeah.
So like let's start digging into that shit and figure it out, you know, piece by piece, step by step. Absolutely. This is all a journey, man. You know, to Nick's point earlier, it's the whole thing's a journey for the rest of our life. And it's going to continue to, we're going to continue to have these little pieces, these little things that are going to be like, man, I got to work on that now.
Yeah. No question. So, and I've very much got some work to do around shadow work. And excited would not be the right word to say that I am about going about this work.
I'm excited for you, though.
Aww. However, comma, I am willing.
Despite the apprehension.
That I am willing to do the work, and I am willing to now look at this piece because it's time. And it wasn't time before, for whatever reason. I mean,
totally.
I'm almost 9 years sober, and this is the time. And so that's okay, you know, that's the way it needed to be.
Yeah.
And I'm
it's so cool because you don't have to take it all on at once. It's not like when you start the shadow work, you got to go to the deepest door in your basement and you got to go all the way down there and you got to open that motherfucker. And no, you start where you're comfortable and start looking up, opening them covers where that, you know, and because there's levels to this shit, guys. I mean, you guys know it can start with the simplest things. And so I think the first thing is to overcome the fear side of it. It's just becoming more aware of it, you know, like knowing that it's not a dark thing. It's not this spooky thing that's you're embracing it. And so, yeah.
Oh, I was to say, like, being as far into this recovery process as you are, you already know that when you face the things that, you know, you were afraid of, that they really weren't that bad.
Right, totally.
That, like, nothing, you know, we made mountains out of molehills in our mind.
You got it.
And when you face them, they shrink, you know, you shed a light on them, you expose them, and they lose their power, you know, slowly.
Sunlight is the best disinfectant.
Yes, it truly is. Yeah, for real.
Not, and on the other side, I know, based on the other work I've done, is freedom. It's greater self-acceptance, greater self-love, and greater peace.
Hell yeah. And you guys, you too. I mean, what's not to love, man?
Aww.
You back guys should you. Love yourselves because you're amazing dudes.
And as you are.
Yeah.
So that's tremendous that we end on such a loving note. I love that. Definitely check the show notes for all the resources. We'll disclaim again. Shadow work is not something just to launch into without any preparation, and definitely ensure that you're doing it in a safe space with people that know what they're doing, in community, with professionals where it makes sense and where it would be helpful. We do very much encourage you to look at shadow work and identify if doing this work in your recovery could really unlock things for you in a way that you have not been able to unlock before. And on the other side of it, as I said, experience greater acceptance of self, greater self-love, and greater peace, and a more sustainable and enduring recovery. Nick, brother, thank you. Jason, brother, thank you so much. You guys are absolutely fantastic. Yeah. If Nick joins us again, Jason, he's just going to probably have to be a co-host. I mean,
that's what I was.
You know what I'm saying?
I'll be a shoo-in anytime, man. I love it. You guys are awesome.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. It was fun. It was a blast. Yeah,
this is a good one. I appreciate it, man. This is good.
And we only scratched the surface.
I know. That's it. That's true. Like, we only, you know. This is just a, you know, milk for babes, meat for men. We're giving you guys a little bit of milk right now.
Oh,
I love that. Yeah.
Nelson Mandela, you know, many of us through our lifetimes will pass through the valley of the shadows of death over and over again before we reach the mountaintops of our desires.
Mm. I love it. Jason, good. Take us out.
Yep. Take care of yourselves. And each other.
I needed to hear that. And keep again, thank you, everybody out there, Way Out Podcast Land, for your ears. We will talk to you next time.
Thank you for being a part of The Way Out. We appreciate your ears. We're sharing powerful recovery stories and recovery power topics every week. So keep listening up. If you would like to reach out to the show, you can visit us on the web at wayoutcast.com. That's wayoutcast.com. allonword.com. There you can subscribe to the Way Out Podcast on all of the major podcast aggregators such as iTunes, CastBox, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podbean, Overcast, and more. Or simply drop your hosts a friendly email at share@wayoutcast.com. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the show, contact us at share@wayoutcast.com. See you next time, and remember, if you don't change, your sobriety date will.